Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Staff and Graph Podcast.
This is weird. My lock's been drilled, so I open the door and my steering wheel is missing.
And links are salad.
You know what? You're trying very hard not to get sued.
You can have all the talent in the world skating around, but if you don't have a goaltender, it does not matter.
Team Tidy Business, baby. I know you don't want to talk about the Leafs that much.
I actually don't want to talk about them at all, but I'll allow it.
No, I'm just going to say, because I think the people want us to talk about the Leafs at least a tiny little bit. I am prepared to eat my words.
Are you going to eat a crow?
No, apparently that's really bad news.
It's dangerous. You know, I was going to say, I have to stop you from doing
there
that.
First of all, crows are considered like sacred.
Right.
And so eating a crow... First of all, my mic stand is giving me a ton of trouble right now. But there is crows are sacred. And so apparently to eat them gives you like curses you basically. And
what?
Yeah. And so the conspiracy. Yeah. The crows are the smartest.
Is this a QAnon thing?
No. Crows are the smartest bird there is.
They
remember you. They hold grudges, but they also they can feel compassion. They can get into any container that you want them to.
Wait, so let me get this straight. They have compassion, but they can also hold grudges. So crows are
women.
Me?
Women, ladies.
Crows are women. That's the podcast title.
Crows be shopping, huh? Crows, it's crazy how I see crows in the sky when they should be in the kitchen. Am I right, fellas?
Okay, so Mike anyway, what is I'm not going to eat a crow.
Yeah, what I'm saying, but I want to bring it up because it's it's a horrible story. But crows are like considered sacred because they're like old wise souls in bird bodies. They're just that. They're considered sacred in a lot of cultures. And so to eat one is apparently like it curses you. And so I would normally think that's mumbo jumbo. That's ridiculous.
Literal nonsense. That's something I would read on a QAnon website.
Exactly. But you know who Wendy Williams is?
Yeah.
So Wendy Williams, she made some crazy claim and then it was proven wrong. And by crazy claim, I mean, she probably said someone was pregnant and they weren't or something.
Fair.
So she, on her show, she ate a crow. Like she cooked
like it. Like an actual?
And ate a crow because she ate crow. And when I'm not sure if you've been keeping up with what's
not
going on with
going
Wendy
well.
Williams lately, but almost immediately after she did that. And so A, it curses you, but also B, apparently to eat a crow is really bad. There's some bacteria in there that are really bad for you. So I'm not going to eat a crow is what I'm saying. But
you'd be better off eating your shoe.
I'm willing to eat my words because we dumped on the Leafs for I literally said they're
rightfully
not.
So.
Yes, rightfully so. Not everything happens in a vacuum here,
right,
guys.
It was fully deserved.
They were down 3-1. They played probably the worst game, probably the worst playoff game of the Matthews Marner era at home. They got booed off the ice, so I get it. But what this team has done to come together without Austin Matthews in the lineup, is and surge back,
and play extremely well defensively.
I think
I've been in the building for all the home games of this series.
I think they're going to win. I think the Bruins are scared.
I'm feeling a hell of a lot better about my +850 series bet that I took after game 4 than I was feeling when I took it. So I won a huge bet. So
remember what I said with our prediction?
Yep.
Leafs in 7?
Yep.
What's interesting, though, is
Man had Kings in 7.
I did. That's true.
But he also had Leafs in 7. No, but what I was going to say
I had the Sabres making the playoffs, so,
He also had Ottawa making the playoffs. Oops.
That's the last time I pandered a Sens fans. Anyway.
No, but, I've been in the building for all the games, mm-hmm. right? I think first of all, last night's crowd was
unreal.
Decidedly, like, much better. First of all,
what was the difference?
Game three, I actually didn't think it was that bad. It was just you could feel tension. Game four, they flat out didn't deserve a single thing. They deserved to get their asses booed right off the ice. Last night, the crowd, I'm not prepared to say it was like a Raptors type crowd or like a TFC crowd when they were winning MLS Cups and stuff like that. But what I will say is I've been in a lot of buildings for the playoffs around the NHL.
Same,
it's not a Vegas Nashville one, but the building I thought it closely resembled was MSG, which I think is a fair comparison given how expensive it is to get in the garden.
Like the clientele.
So the clientele, the fan base, and the fact that it's an original six team in a historic sort of, I guess, situation.
Yeah, and they have long-standing demons.
Right, and they had, so the game I went to at MSG was a Devils-Rangers game. Mm-hmm. Well, Leafs-Bruins is similar to Rangers-Devils in the sense that it's a huge rivalry.
Yeah.
So for me, I look at last night's game and I go, well, if the atmosphere was close to a Devils-Rangers playoff game, that's a pretty damn good atmosphere. It's pretty difficult to criticize. And I felt like the boys, they played well. Willie Nylander, there is a full-blown moratorium on criticizing him because that is his, I believe, fourth straight game six with at least one goal. So you straight up don't get to say that. Matthew Nyes should be signed forever.
He will be.
That's a big boy hockey player right there. And we'll see what happens on Saturday night. I'm not going to make any, like, if they lose, this happens, or if they win, this happens.
We all know. Well, first of all, if they win, like, they beat Tampa last year, and yet after they got murdered by the Panthers, like, everyone wanted change.
And that's, like, the thing is, like, I feel like, unless they beat Florida, all those changes that would have happened after game five are probably happening.
Oh, they're
anyways.
All still on the table unless they get to at least the conference final. Like, it's...
Yeah, if you lose in the conference final, that's different, because that's a final four.
If you lose the conference final, there will still be discussions, I think. Like,
well, yeah, like, I think if you get swept, there's still...
But if you lose in, like, five in the conference final, there will be board meetings where it will be a difficult decision, and we will be waiting on pins and needles to find out if Sheldon Keefe comes back, you know, if Brendan Shanahan sticks around, if Marner gets traded or forced to get traded or something. Like, but right now... Like, I think it's important to just sort of, before we move on to other teams, like, to just sort of, like, appreciate the fact that they were dead in the water.
They were capable of this.
And I would say they're on the front foot. Like, like the Bruins, keep in mind, that was the seventh opportunity that the Bruins had, I believe, to close out a series, and they failed in a row.
Sixth.
This
will they're be about seven, their seven Saturday. Yeah.
That was their sixth straight opportunity to close out a series, and they blew it. They also, a calendar year ago, blew this exact same thing.
They blew a game seven lead.
Yes. You know, they blew a 3-1 game, 3-1 series lead.
And the same thing happened. Alex Lyon started that series,
mm-hmm.
went and pumpkin then, mode, and Sergei Bobrovsky came in and went psycho.
And I just want to think, like...
And Joseph Woll has a .968 right now, which, Joseph by Woll, the way, is fucked.
Joseph Woll is the story of this series. 100%. Joseph Woll has, like...
I don't want to see another goalie in the net.
Well, you never will.
I don't, like,
Ilya Samsonov has played his last game as a Leaf. You know, like, he, like...
I like Scott Wheeler's tweet. Pants shitting per 60 mm-hmm. with Joseph Woll is so much lower. But then Joel Edmondson comparing...
I was just about to say, Joseph Woll, you mean a young Jordan Binnington? They could not be more... I've interviewed both players. They could not be more different... They could not possibly be more different.
Human beings.
Like, I can't even think of a metaphor. Like, they yeah. are fire and ice. They are
oil and water.
Oil and water. They are I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, things that are opposite. Like, it's just they
magnesium
are
magnesium and light.
They're great. Science. There you go. You know, like, they are completely different people. The only thing that I think Joel Edmondson thought between the two of them is that they're calm. They're both relatively calm under a flurry of shots. But then the whistle blows and Jordan Binnington tries... like
His pants shitting per 60
exactly.
skyrockets.
It's crazy. So it's... Look, they've played phenomenal. Joseph Woll is the story of the series. I shudder to think what this series would be like and if it might even already be over if they had just gone with him in the first place.
Or even... Not even gone. Like, I understand the decision to go with Samsonov in game one. But like after game three, he should have been in the net for game four.
100%.
No discussion.
Like what do you, first of all, like you have one guy who's on an expiring deal and the other guy who's an RFA, who has another year, I believe, left on his contract and then is an RFA and is considered your goalie of the future. So it's not like you're trying to like play politics here or you're trying to sort of like, this is the guy that you draft and developed and you signed Samsonov as like a free agent. You know, like what's the big deal here? Like just go with your guy. Wohl has been nothing but fantastic. Both play, like Wohl came back from injury.
And he wasn't very good.
You know who also wasn't very good throughout the last 2 months of the season? Ilya Samsonov. They were both going into the playoffs on the opposite of heaters, on colders, if you will. And so like it was not great. Like it was a toss up. Not one had not established one from the other. They went with experience, and I get that. That's fine. But like after game three, when the guy had like an .880 save percentage and he just wasn't stopping any, like he was stopping things that would come to him. But anytime he had to remotely like sort of sell out or just like steal a save, it was the back of the net.
All right.
So yeah.
Speaking of things going in the back of the net, the Winnipeg Jets got eliminated. And I went back and looked at some stats.
Mm-hmm.
Connor Hellebuyck, yes, he gave up like 24 goals, which like that can't happen.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Okay, but 18 of those 24 goals were considered high danger scoring chances. And
yeah, the Jets have a bad blue line.
And 16 of them were screens. I get it. You expect Connor Hellebuyck to like not give up 5 goals. I totally understand that. You can't give up 18 high danger goals and over 75% of your goals are screens and expect this guy to stop the puck.
Yeah, like there's
this is not going
to
work.
There's a limit to the amount you can put on the shoulders of your goalie. And like the Jets have consistently put the most on the shoulder, other than maybe the Canucks and Demko, they've put the most.
The Islanders and Sorokin, but that didn't go well this year.
No, it was a disaster this year. Who they also got bounced, but I don't even care enough about them to have them as a subject. I don't give a shit that Lou Lamoriello and Patrick Roy are coming back. Great. They're going to be mid again next year, whatever. But like, there's a limit to how much you can ask of your goaltender, like reasonably. Connor Hellebuyck has exceeded expectations every year. This is not on him. Like no. this is on the fact that I thought the Jets had a phenomenal trade deadline. They got Tyler Toffoli for nothing.
I love their move.
Sean Monahan fit in swimmingly. He was fantastic. And yet they didn't address their defense. Like Neil Pionk can't be in your top four. He's been bad for like 3 years now. He had a good like sort of second year, I think, in Winnipeg. But after that, he has been like unplayable. You can't rely on Logan Stanley. You can't do stuff like that. Like there just isn't enough back there to help out. And clearly they don't know what they're doing because 18 high danger scoring chances that ended up in goals, most of those being screens. Your guys don't know where to stand.
Yeah. And the thing is like Winnipeg up until I want to say like the All-Star break was one of the top defensive teams mm-hmm. in the league. And then things started to fall off. And Rick Bowness said multiple times, like we're getting complacent. And there were reports coming out of Winnipeg at practice. He was laying into them mm-hmm. like, you've got to do this. There was a point where he had like full-blown marker out on the ice. So I'm like, this guy's, and I know Rick Bowness's defensive system. Mm. It is a good defensive system.
And he made a cup final.
And I genuinely believe that blue line is the issue. Because if anyone is going to sit here, obviously Connor Hellebuyck was not good, but if you were going to sit here and say that Connor Hellebuyck is the reason that the Jets went out, you're crazy.
Connor Hellebuyck isn't, I would say, he's not in the top five of reasons.
Exactly. And
he's
so,
six probably, but he's not in the top five.
And then I think there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed. Like the Nikolai Ehlers issue, the Mark Scheifele, like you've signed.
So I
want to
talk about that. I'm both of those things. Number one.
And also Rick Bowness got nominated for the Jack Adams after like one of the most tough personal years for him.
Yeah, fantastic.
He's also a giant teddy bear. Congratulations to him.
He is. I want to talk about those three things that you brought up. So let's start with Ehlers because it's probably the quickest because he's coming up into the last year of his deal. He's
got to play more.
He has been criminally between Maurice and Bonus criminally underused or misused. Even he never gets power play one time. He gets put with guys who cannot score.
He's the best winger on the team.
He is the best winger on the team. And you, I asked you a question back when we were talking about the Jets, I think before or right after the trade deadline, where it's, why does Nikolaj Ehlers continue to get such disrespect? And it was a great point you made, where his mistakes are glaring. They're few and far between, but when he makes them, they're glaring. And coaches, like, that burns into a coach's brain. Whereas a Kyle Connor, he'll make about 50 tiny mistakes over the course of a play, but they don't all stick out. So you don't immediately pin it on him. But the next coach of the Jets, whether it's still Bonus, again, we'll talk about that because he's got an option for his third year, or it's a new guy, they have to get over the drama of or that sort of like the flamboyant nature of Nikolaj Ehlers' mistakes and just believe in the talent and history of production in tiny minutes.
I was having this conversation with somebody last night at the game. There's a lot of, and I'm going to drop back to the Leafs because there's a similar comparison here. So the Jets have Ehlers, Connor. The Leafs have two star wingers, Marner, Nylander. William Nylander is who Leaf fans believe Mitch Marner is in terms of, like, back checks, good defensively, makes hits, tough on pucks, forechecks, shows up in the playoffs sometimes, like, that kind of thing. Same for Nikolaj Ehlers. Nikolaj Ehlers is who Jets fans and apparently coaches think that Kyle Connor is. Nikolaj Ehlers drives the bus offensively. Nikolaj Ehlers makes, like, difference-making plays. Yes, he makes errors, and they stand out. Like, when Nylander has a shit effort, it stands out. Whereas Mitch Marner and Kyle Connor, because they're constantly on the top line, and in Marner's case, is pretty good defensively, I think when you look at it, you see a scenario where there's almost this skewed belief of, well, because one player is one thing, another player can't be that, and they will never, ever see it that way. Mm-hmm. And so I think with Nikolaj Ehlers, I look at it and I go, he's better defensively than Connor because Connor is useless defensively.
Yeah.
He's way better in transition. He's much more reliable with the puck. And yes, do his mistakes, are they costly? Absolutely. But does he make less of them? Also, absolutely. And frankly, if I had to win one game, I would be choosing Ehlers.
The only good thing about this is that the next, I don't think he stays in Winnipeg.
Ehlers?
Yeah. I think he is, like, maybe he'll probably play out the end of his deal, but, like, when it comes to being a free agent, he's already said,
Mitch Marner for Nikolaj Ehlers plus.
Yeah, but he's already waffled on, well, he's been asked the question about signing an extension. He's already waffled on that.
Well, yeah, and he's being treated
exactly.
Like
exactly. And this, the only upside is that another team, the Carolina Hurricanes.
Oh,
you 100%. Just know that they're
Vegas.
Gonna do it. Vegas or
it's gonna be Vegas.
It's gonna be Vegas or Carolina.
Oh my god.
One or the other.
Nikolaj Ehlers for Nick Hague. That's the trade. That's what the trade's gonna be.
That would solve a lot of problems. But
for both teams.
The next, like, whoever signs him will be getting a very, very good player for a price that is less than what he's worth. They have, like, the Jets have nuked his value. They will get, whoever, Vegas or Carolina, whoever wants to sign him when he becomes a free agent, they will get him for, like, $5 million when he should be getting paid, like,
$7. Congratulations to the Carolina Hurricanes.
Or eight. Yeah, congratulations. So the second one I want to talk about, and they're kind of maybe linked, is Mark Scheifele again. Now, his 8-year extension hasn't even kicked in yet. It kicks in next year.
Yep.
So
Ofa.
Yeah, and
but that Connor Hellebuck extension looks real hot.
Now, he had a good year,
yeah.
Mark Scheifele, a good year offensively. However, there have been reports for a very, very long time that him and Rick Bonus do not see eye to eye. It started.
Were there reports that him and Paul Maurice didn't see eye to eye too?
You know what? Paul Maurice.
Oh, Claude Noel, sorry.
It was Claude Noel because Paul Maurice babied them. Right. Paul Maurice.
Okay, so two of the three.
Yeah. Now, Paul Maurice, like, he's doing great in Florida, and we'll get into that in a sec, because his team just eliminated, you know, their cross-state rivals.
That we're going
to
talk about.
But Paul Maurice would give way too much leeway to that leadership group. that's what caused their downfall for so long.
No leeway.
Was not in. Was
Mark
not in
Shifley,
that. Yeah.
The
Mark,
most
like Mark Shifley, Blake Wheeler, all those guys in there. Absolutely, you can bully Patrick Laine as much as you want. Like, it's fine. However, there have been a ton of reports. And remember last year, the eye roll to end all eye rolls.
Oh,
from
yes.
When asked that, because this is the second. There have been two documented moments in high leverage situations here where where Rick Bowness has been asked about a system adjustment that they need to make, and he's gone, yes, we need to make this. And then Mark Scheifele's been asked about it and has gone, I don't really think we need to do that. I think we're good, you know. Like, and then one has been brought to the other and they go, oh my God. Like, it is Mark Scheifele and Rick Bowness are not on the same page. One just is not even into his 8-year extension. The other one has a club option, or I believe it's either a coach or a club option.
I was gonna say it.
Yeah.
In the same way I said last episode about the letter on the jersey for a different player, that letter's got to come off the jersey. Well, you are straight up, Mark Scheifele is not a leader.
First of all,
Adam Lowry, I think, is
a phenomenal captain.
Captain. I think Josh Morrissey showed, like, he's got leadership qualities. Mm-hmm. But, like, there is no scenario here where Mark Scheifele can be considered a leader. Well, like, he's just straight up.
It's funny you say that, because I believe these problems started by Rick Bowness coming in and taking a letter off Mark Scheifele's friend's jersey and Blake Wheeler. Like, Mark Scheifele has the greatest PR department in the league.
The fact that people
consider him as, like, a solid, like he is hailed. If you ask, you know, any, like, the random person, he is hailed as, like, a great two-way center.
But you know what's crazy is, so it's funny that you say that, because he was clearly, like, horrendous in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Like, awful.
Yeah.
But every time, so the Olympics are coming back, and thank God the NHL is going. Mm-hmm. Right?
He's not on Team Canada.
And this is what I'm getting to, is every time they talk about Team Canada, so if they talk about Mark Scheifele in a vacuum, they're like, oh, he's like a great hockey player. Every time Team Canada gets brought up, it's like nowhere near the discussion. Like, nowhere near it. And to be fair, like, we're talking about a team that up the middle is going to have Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Connor Bedard, Macklin Celebrini, and Sidney Crosby. Like, that's five guys. One of them is going to have to play the wing. And, like, Crosby's going to be on the fourth line.
Crosby's not playing the wing. Like, Celebrini will be playing the wing.
Exactly.
Like, but it's...
You know what I'm saying is, like, you can wax poetic, or the media can wax poetic about what they think about Mark Scheifele in a vacuum, but when push comes to shove, he is not even close.
Who would, like I'm thinking of forwards that would be ahead of Mark Scheifele. The ones you mentioned.
Mark Stone is ahead of him.
Mark Stone's ahead of him. Literally, like, Mitch Marner's ahead of him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What are you talking... By a mile.
Yeah. Like, and this is a guy who we dumped on, and the world has dumped on throughout this playoff series.
I'm going to be quite honest with you. I would take John Tavares over Mark Scheifele right now. Because you know what? I can at least look John Tavares in the face and say, in a big game, I know you can make a big play.
Well, you know what?
And more importantly, not going to throw a temper tantrum.
And you know what? It would also be Tavares playing the wing, which I think would be better because his legs are clearly shot at this point.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't have to skate as much. Yeah. Like, it's now
Mark Scheifele just flat out. I don't think you can win a cup if Mark Scheifele is your number one center. You look at teams who have won the cup the last few years, right? Mm-hmm.
Eichel.
MacKinnon. Is
MacKinnon
pretty good? MacKinnon's
pretty good.
Stamkos
or Point or any of those guys. Like, you know, you even go before that, like...
Ryan
O'Reilly in his prime.
Yeah, like, I'm exactly.
Like, that's like a guy O'Reilly. Who's like a point per, a 30 to 40 goal,
and then
point
you,
per game guy who's
that,
a Selkie.
It was Sidney Crosby, and then before that, it was Patrice Bergeron. Are any
even
of
before the, that, Anze Kopitar, Jonathan Taves, like, you know, Vincent Lecavalier in his prime, if you want to go even back that far.
Elite.
Rod Brind'Amour, like, guys like that, you know, like,
that's a two-way center right there.
Yeah, that is the two-way center. Like, yeah. It's of the modern era. So, yeah, like, you're right. Scheifele can't. And,
like, they need an actual number one center.
They're batting .500 on those dual extensions. I think the Hellebuyck one is fantastic. Yeah. You've locked him in for the remainder of his effective playing days
at a
number that by the minute looks better because of what the cap is going to be at, but you locked in 8 years to a guy who has been like a culture menace to you pretty much the entire time he's been there. And now anytime you hire someone, you now have to go, will him and Mark get along? Every time you bring in a new change, a new player, a new system, a new assistant coach, a new any, you have to go, will him and Mark get along? Will it be February and the Jets are on a 3-game losing streak and Mark is just going to say, no, I'm not doing this system adjustment? That's something you have to worry about now.
It's not insane. Okay.
The only good news that's come from this, though, is that a certain giant-toothed Jets fan is upset. And which, you know what? I think we can all agree is a good thing for the world.
The Jets went 0-4 after he made that video.
Yeah. So maybe he's a fucking idiot.
And he was wearing a Bruins jersey last night on a subway platform.
So maybe he's a fucking idiot, and I'm glad he's sad. All right. Moving on.
I'm not sad about that. I wished for better for Liss and Brady because I love them.
I love my boy Brad.
And only them.
I love my boy Brad. He moved to Thailand. I'm not sure if you know about that.
He's a teacher now.
It's made me very sad because I can't feel his embrace the one time a year he comes to Toronto. It's a shame. He's my best pal. Anyway.
Yeah, Winnipeg's got some blue line to address.
Some stuff to figure out. And they will be an interesting sort of like off-season what do they do kind of team, like for an episode when we're hurting for content, because they have some contracts, they have some space. They're a team that is very close to, like, on paper, they seemed very good. They seemed like they could make noise. And yet, here they are. They didn't even last 6 games. They're done. All right.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Tampa, another team that got booted. Now, I like a lot of guys on Tampa. I like John Cooper, the coach.
I want to talk about John Cooper before we get into Tampa.
About the comments?
And not even that.
Oh, okay.
Like, yes, the comments, but I actually want to talk about what happened after them.
Oh, yeah. Let's not spend too much time on this, though.
No, but what I'm saying is like, a lot of times, like, even us, like, we screw up, we say dumb shit.
Yeah, I just said women be shopping to start this episode, okay?
No, but everyone, everyone screws up. Like, Patrick Beverley whipped a basketball at a fan last night and then told a female reporter that she couldn't interview him unless she subscribed to his podcast,
which, by the way,
is ridiculous.
Which, by the way, applies to all other media members out there. Do not speak to me unless you're subscribed to this podcast.
So
I've won as many conference finals as Patrick Beverley has. So
I'm on as many rings,
and I'm probably going to have the same number of NBA contracts for next year as him. So we're on the same level.
And you haven't been suspended from the NBA.
No, exactly.
Because that's definitely coming. You don't get to whip a basketball at a fan. But kind of what I'm getting at is, John Cooper has a reputation for being a stand-up guy. He's always talking about being, like, a good human being and doing stuff in, like, from a charity perspective. Like, he's somebody, like, you've dealt with him a little bit. I've dealt with him
more times than I can count, and that guy,
one of the only coaches in the NHL I have nary a complaint about.
First of all, he's the best quote. Him and Paul Maurice are the best quotes in the league, player or coach. And two, like, he is a good human being.
Right. So when he said that, I was taken aback. I was like, that's out of character. And so what I liked and what I kind of wanted to touch on was he got dumped on, and rightly so. Like, that was an inappropriate comment. But he didn't wait for somebody else to be like, do you want to say something about that? I went back and I watched the entire video of his press conference. He stepped to the podium, and before anyone could even, like, say a word, he said, I need to say something first.
Yeah.
And he went on this whole thing. And the difference between what he said and what so many other people do is that felt really genuine. Like, he said, I went home, I had to look my daughters in the eye, I had to explain to them what I said and how it was totally unacceptable. And he went back and he was like, that's something I want to reach back and take out. Yeah. Like, I can't be speaking like that. It seemed genuinely remorseful. He took genuine accountability. And everyone was like, it's that fucking easy. Like, you literally just have to walk up there and say, I apologize, that is not acceptable to say, and then everyone's, like, moved on. Like, no one is going to remember this come September because he did such a good job of taking accountability.
He also said, and I think it's very important, he said, this has pained me more than the series loss. You know? John yeah. Cooper's a good guy, and you know what? Like,
I have so much respect for that.
There is, like, I think we have to also realize, too, like, for so long, certain comments and things were acceptable, and now we're realizing they're not, and it's very, very good that we're realizing it, they're not. However, there is a, like, because of how long those things were acceptable, for a while, like, for a bit, there will be a re-education of your muscle memory. Right. And that was exactly, and that was clearly a guy who was heated in a situation where he could potentially be fighting for his job, where like his livelihood, like you
which
know,
also it which came is, out that he has a contract extension.
Exactly, like he's so it's fine, but in the moment, right. like you know, you get a second round first, a second
your arch rival,
a second straight first round exit is not a great situation for any coach, regardless of job security, to be in. And clearly his brain revert, like went to the bad muscle memory, and that's not okay at all. However, it's how you respond to it. He responded very well. And I also think that I just think that we're now starting to realize that people make mistakes, and it's how you own up to that mistake. It's how you put in the work and how you
respond to
it. And also, like, it was a terrible comment to make, a demeaning comment, a belittling comment. But there's a difference between saying, you know, our goalies are wearing, like, should be wearing skirts or whatever, and dropping a slur or something, you know?
Exactly.
Right? Like, it, you know.
There's, and if you don't think there's a difference, you are so far gone. Like, I understand you don't want anyone saying any of those things.
Exactly.
But, like, saying the N-word or a homophobic slur is decidedly worse.
And as a woman, I think you can say that, you know, like
100%.
You're the one who was demeaned and belittled by those comments.
And I got to be honest with you. And it might be because I grew up in the situation I grew up in. I was like, oh, like, that's a shitty comment. But I wasn't going to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe that. It's like, OK.
But it's also like we're so far past that now. Like, yeah. Like, first of all, like we.
There are more important things going on in the world. It's not, kind of what I'm getting at here.
Yeah, it's not funny anymore. Like it's not funny to say, like, we should be wearing skirts, you know, like the whole Sidney Crosby thing.
And it's also like he fucking, didn't.
It's not
like he made a joke about sexual assault.
No, but.
Or anything like that. Like, that is different.
But it's also like there are goalies. There are pretty fucking great goalies that wear skirts these days. And there were back in the day, but there are now. And they're now in a league where you're able to, where they're able to make a living and like be international superstars. Like, so that's not even like, what are you even saying by that? I'm glad that he came out and addressed it and did it in a way where it's clear and it's sincere. And I find that a lot of these apologies that we've been getting, because now every week someone has to come out and apologize for what they're doing, because as they
that
should,
was a notably sincere apology.
A lot of these apologies seem to come off in, I'm sorry that you took it that way. This was not that. This was, I fucked up and I'm really sorry. And I hope that you know, like anyone who identifies as a woman out there, anyone who wears a skirt, you know, it can sort of take this apology, and hopefully, as I continue to be a good sort of stand up person, I can earn your forgiveness. I think it's perfect.
It was like a 3-minute apology. Like, yeah. It was a proper. So
Tampa on the ice, though. This is a team in a very interesting situation.
Speaking of John Cooper, they asked him about Steven Stamkos.
Yeah.
And he said he feels like a bolt for life.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's got to talk to Julian and da, 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 but he feels like a bolt for life. That kind of summed it up for me.
Yeah, he feels like a bolt for life, but
I think he's going to be a bolt for life.
I think at the end of the day, most players stay put. Their stuff is there. And I think after living in Tampa, Florida, personally, I don't like Florida because of it's humid and I sweat through my shirt on my way to the shuttle
like
buses
one
there.
One part of Florida and one part of Florida only.
But
it's specifically Disney World.
If I'm 34 turning 35, I have a wife, I have kids, and I've lived in Florida in a mansion, probably not probably. We saw it in that video for the bubble.
By the water.
I don't wanna move. Like, I don't wanna pack all my stuff up and go. We talked about it when we went over the Al Montoya and Keaton Ellerbe
what their
wives are doing for the business. Like it is such a hassle to move. Most players stay because that's where Greg Wyshynski came up. That's where their shit is.
It's literally inconvenient.
However, there are emotional aspects at play in any job and any contract negotiation, especially hockey. And
really, I've never experienced this.
And so
this is news.
I'm not going to pull an Elliot Friedman where I say I've had contract negotiations that have gone wrong. That's Elliot. I love how that's Elliot's like go-to thing. It's very funny because he uses it all the time. That and when I covered the NBA, those are the two things. Elliot, he's got the hits, and I love it. But things were not great at the start of the year. Like, and that's not speculation.
No, that's very true.
That is factual. That is things were. It was icy. You know. Steven Stamkos came out guns blazing.
Oh, it was Antarctica level icy.
On Media Day, which is the most optimistic day. You know how optimistic Media Day is?
Tell me.
In 2022, which is, so not this year, but last year Media Day, Jake Muzzin looked me right in the fucking eyes and said, I am fully healthy and I'm ready to play. And 4 games later, his career ended. So you know what? Like that's how optimistic Media Day is. People are thinking, they're thinking I'm going to live forever and we're going to win the Stanley Cup. And the Chicago Blackhawks probably came into Media Day last year and went, we can surprise people, you know, stuff like that. And Steven Stamkos chose Media Day, was feeling the way on Media Day to go out and be like, I don't have a contract extension. They clearly don't believe in me. Fuck this. And Julian Brisebois came out and said, hey, I'm not ready to give him a contract extension yet, even though he's won 2 cups and, you know, he's like a perennial 40 goal guy.
Retiring his number.
You know, it's like, oh, that's going to be tough. Things, obviously, the result didn't work out great. But Stamkos had a great year. Another 40 goal season. I believe he had 82 or 83 points.
Game.
He was 83 points in 79 games, I believe. He still was one of the best offensive players in the league. But if I'm Steven Stamkos, and again, I'm not. I want to make it very clear I'm not, just in case.
He's Mike Stevens.
But I wouldn't be just ready to put this all behind me. I'd be pissed. Because this is someone I gave everything to this. I've literally given my youth to this team. I bumped single-handedly with those 2 cups, not single-handedly, but with those 2 cups, and I played a giant part. I was the captain. I took the Stanley Cup and passed it to my teammates. That I bumped that franchise valuation up. I've earned Jeff Vinnick millions of dollars.
Oh, hundreds of.
You know, hundreds of million dollars on my own. And you're not willing to commit to me? And after all that, I went out and I put up 40 goals for you and another over point per game season. And now you're gonna come crawling back and go, oh, we want to make you a Bolt for life. I wouldn't take that. I wouldn't be ready to just put that all behind me.
So I feel like this is kind of one of those negotiations where the owner gets involved in the sense of like Jeff Vinnick probably goes to Julian and says, I know you don't like overpaying and we like value contracts here. This is an exception.
Yeah.
Get it done.
Yeah.
And he's probably calling Stammer and being
like, don't worry.
We're good here.
Yeah.
I just can't. It feels weird that, like, to envision Stamkos in another jersey. In the same way, like, when I saw Brodeur in a Blues jersey, I was like, sorry, what?
When I saw Matt Sundin in a Vancouver Canucks jersey, I wanted to shoot myself.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You know? Like, it's. So it
is not cute.
Exactly. Now, it'll likely get done. However, so Stamkos gets done, but this is a team in a very weird and precarious position.
Yeah.
Because their best players are getting up there.
Well, it's not even just that. It's that they've, in the name of winning, and when you win 2 cups and you go to like 5 Final Fours in 8 years, you get afforded that, like, sorry, Tampa Bay fans, you don't get to complain for like a long time.
They almost three-peated.
Yeah, like you,
in the flat cap
there is
era.
A moratorium on complaining for half a decade for you. Minimum.
The Tampa Bay Lightning were so good, they almost three-peated in the flat cap era. Do you have any fucking idea how tough that is?
Yeah, like you just.
Like, so you shut your mouths.
Just like but, everyone in Boston.
Yeah, shut up. But.
Like every Patriots fan, I don't want to hear from you. You can be bad 3 years in a row. Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth. But with Tampa, okay, yeah. So a couple years ago they lose Barclay Gaudreau, Blake Coleman, Yanni Gourde. Their entire third line.
Gone.
Not great.
Yeah.
Right? Then you're Ryan McDonagh.
Gone.
That's a huge loss.
You trade him for nothing, basically.
Right. He's gone. Then you give up the sun and the moon for Tanner Jeannot.
I was gonna bring it. That was their, if they could have, he just hasn't panned out. Well, that was their, because they made these trades. They would overpay for players, at least on the trade market at their current value. But they would do it in a way where it's like, this is excess. And in the playoffs, you need excess. You need more. It's better to have more than less of what you need. Like paying a first for Barclay Gaudreau was looked at as fucking lunacy.
That's ridiculous.
But he helped them win a Stanley Cup. Even the price for Blake Coleman at the time, it was a lot. They gave up two firsts for Brandon Hagel, and although Brandon Hagel didn't win anything with the Tampa, he still helped them get to a final.
He's also there long term now. Like, yes. I think that trade's actually fine.
You know, even like, and they've gotten a lot of these. No, and the trade's fantastic. But like at the time, that was a lot to give up. For
at the
him.
Time, you and I looked at each other. We were like, holy shit!
It's two first round picks for a guy like this. It's nuts.
Yeah, I thought it was a typo.
But they're good on either overpaying for these guys to bring them in or finding these sort of under the radar,
dudes.
But even just like Yanni Gourde, like you said, or even like Mikey Aisamont, he worked out great. You know, like he's been very, very good for them. You know, stuff like that.
Darren Radish.
Nick Perbix, guys like that. Yeah. However, Tanner Jeannot was supposed to be their next Blake Coleman or Brandon Hagel, and that they traded an entire draft class of people and a known predator, alleged predator, for him, from the Predators, funnily enough. And he just he has been unplayable. He was a healthy scratch. It's been a resounding failure. And if they hit on that Jeannot, if Jeannot turned back into the 25 to 30 goal scorer that he looked like he was going to be in his rookie season.
We're probably not talking about it.
We're not talking about them out of the playoffs right now. In fact, we're talking about them beating Toronto last year.
Yep.
If you had a good and healthy Tanner Jeannot last year, like at Tanner Jeannot from his rookie year, you beat Toronto last year. Came down to overtime, you remember.
Yep.
And
I was exactly trashed at the bar.
I was covering it. And you also are likely going into a game seven with Florida right now. It's a totally different conversation we're having, not to pin this all on Tanner Jeannot. On top of that, so you have Victor Hedman is 33, he's turning 34. He also has a lot of miles on his body. Everyone here, we also have to talk about having the most miles of anyone in the league.
So this is what I wanted to get to.
Yeah.
You play this long for, like, sports science dictates your body's going to break down. We saw that with Andrei Vasilevsky last year in the playoffs, and then I felt like we saw it elongated this year.
We saw it this year in the playoffs. Saying
like this year it was actually, it crept into the regular season in the sense that
he was hurt right off the hop too.
Right. So there was that. Victor Hedman has a ton of miles on his body. Steven Stamkos has had a zillion surgeries. Mikhail Sergachev.
He broke his femur 90 days ago.
His tibia and his fibula. But then before that, he destroyed his knee. He was back for a period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then destroyed his knee. And then
you look at it, like, when you play the Eric Chernak as well.
Eric Chernak is a ton, and he's only 26, but he's a ton of miles on his body. Like, I could go down the list.
Only dude who basically hasn't had some level of major injury is Braden Point.
Yeah.
Right? Kucherov was good this year.
But Kucherov missing a whole year. You know?
Yeah. Anthony Cirelli was hurt this year.
He's been hurt like every year.
Probably because he plays like a psycho.
You know, everyone on that lineup has either played a crap ton of games or has had a crap ton of injuries, and they're all getting older. Kucherov is 30 now. You know, like Hedman's going to be 34. Vasilevsky's going to be 30. You know, like although we talk about Stamkos, if they re-sign him, is going to be 35. Like, although we talk about, you know, like 30 might not seem that long, but with the miles you have on that body and the age, and especially with goalies, how we know they get to 30 and that decline cannot be pretty.
They basically die.
Yeah. Like they're like running backs almost. Like you get to 30 and like they're, you really see a decline and it happens, or like cornerbacks really.
It's really difficult on your knees as a goalie.
To do a wall sit for 60 straight minutes.
A guy, I hate to say it, but like a guy like Thatcher Demko, who's had 17 knee injuries in his career, prime candidate to fall off when he turns 30.
Yeah.
Now, I think he's got at least 2 or 3 more years where he's going to be elite, elite. But if you have knees, groins that are problems, you are far more likely to fall off. And so, like, what does Tampa do? Anthony Cirelli's locked up for time. Nikita Kucherov, Andrei Vasilevsky, Victor Hedman. Like, they're not trading any of those guys.
No, they're all of them are locked up for 6 years, at least.
Brandon Hagel
got signed, like, started an 8-year deal last year. Like, they, after they made the cup final, they locked up Cirelli, Chernak, I believe
Sergachev.
And Sergachev, all to 8-year deals. Like, no one's going, but.
And those guys are young. Like, Sergachev is still pretty young.
Yeah, but ton of miles on his body. Oh, yeah. Like even the young guys, like Chernak is 26, but that guy is being beaten to hell.
Oh, he plays a tough game.
You know, like.
He plays a tough game.
And so.
What, even Darren Radish is our age. He's 28.
Yeah. And bald.
Is he really?
Is that a joke or like
I haven't
Darren Radish is one of the baldest men I've ever met. Like he is
Getzlaf?
He is
Messier. He might Messier.
He's like Sam Bennett, like where his helmet comes off, you go like bald, 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 like the SpongeBob clip. Yeah. Like but it's what will dictate Tampa's ability to keep going? Because they you can't run like or sort of rebuild. Everyone's signed to term. Everyone's been here forever. Everyone still has enough in the tank to keep going. And it would be crazy to give up when you have a 30-year-old Nikita Kucherov with like 6 years left. But what will dictate is they have to find the diamonds in the rough that made this a dynasty to begin with. They have to be able to pick in the fourth round and get a guy that can play on their third line in 2 years, or they have to sign a guy.
Well, in order to pick in the fourth round, you have to have draft exactly. selections.
So they have to figure some things out here, but like they need to moneyball it. Like they need to, you know, get
go Billy Bean. See, I could see them trading a legit piece, not a Kucherov or a point.
No, but
I could see them trading a piece that helps them get younger.
Who's the most likely guy to go, do you think?
Probably Chernak.
You really give up on a guy who's 26?
No, I'm not saying you're giving not up. Give up, on a guy.
But you get a lot. You could get a lot
you
for
could
him.
You could get
right.
a disgusting amount for that. You're getting a first and a top prospect. Done.
That's true.
Easy. Right. So if Tampa wants to get younger and really take advantage of Kucherov, Hedman, and Vasilevsky while they can, what you need, and honestly, it's just because it's top of mind right now, you need to trade Chernak for guys who are like Matthew Knies's age, right? 21 years old, proven they can play in the NHL on cheap deals. You can get that for a guy like Eric Chernak, right? So I think that's, I could see Tampa doing that.
Yeah.
Is kind of what I see. Now, Julian Brisebois is also the king of pulling rabbits out of his hat.
Exactly. But he needs to start doing that again.
Like, he's going to start finding. He's whiffed a bunch. I'm telling you, at some point over the next 4 months, you and I are going to sit down to record this podcast and we're going to look at each other and say, he did it again.
Rachel, you assume that the city will not burn to the ground after Saturday night and will still be alive to record a podcast in 4 months. Which,
do I watch the game downtown or do I just go home and enjoy it in peace?
Go home.
Because so there's a part of me that's like, I want to be downtown because if they lose, everyone's going to be like angry and psycho. But if they win, it's going to be bedlam. It is going to be bedlam.
Go home.
You think?
I'm watching it alone. Like I will only watch it. I will only watch Leafs playoff games alone.
That's why I was thinking about staying here because then I could watch it alone.
Yeah, watch it alone, and if they win, then if you want to join in the fun, you can.
I'm going out with my friends after we've already.
But if they and if
because it's Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, it's true. But if you lose, you at least are not in the blast radius of like. But it is like.
I think if they lose like 3-2,
there will still be.
It'll be bad. But if they get like 5-1. This place is burning down.
No, if they lose 3-2, there will be. If they lose 3-2, it will be because of a stupid call. Also,
imagine if they lost 4-1.
Well, I would fucking kill myself. But also, no, like first of all, and this is something, and we're gonna get to Dallas in a sec, but this is something that not a lot of people have recognized is that Wes McCauley has not reffed a game in this series yet.
I'm really scared that he's reffing tomorrow.
I would bet my left ball that Wes McCauley is getting the job for game seven?
If I had to guess, I think it's going to be Wes McCauley and Dan O'Rourke. That would be my guess for tomorrow. Anyways, let's talk about Dallas. Let's not worry about that. Let's talk about
the
Dallas.
The Dallas Stars.
They made it.
This is the best series. We were counting them out again. Like,
and then Jake Ottinger want to bet.
Jake Ottinger has a .936 save percentage his last three games. And really, that is kind of skewed by he stopped 25 of 27 in their first victory of the season. But other than that, he has stopped like 35 shots in the next two and let in one goal.
Ridiculous.
He has dragged them back from to now in the driver's seat again. They were down 0-2 going to Vegas, and now they are going, I believe, back to Vegas. Up 3-2 with the chance to knock out the defending Stanley Cup champions, who formed a super team at the deadline in their own building. Incredible.
I think this goes seven.
Absolutely, this goes seven.
This is going seven. Yeah. Which is what that was we our both prediction. Said it. We both said it's going seven and probably overtime in seven.
I would love that. It would be good for the sport if this went seven. Like, it would be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm down. I've loved this series. Like, all the Stars have been, like, Jake Ottinger has been hilarious. Jack Eichel has been
great.
So
Mark Stone's been good. Like we haven't we really.
Thomas Hurdle's been good.
We haven't even seen, like, Jason Robertson explode yet. We haven't really seen Rupe Hintz explode yet. You know, like there's still depths to be plumbed, if you will.
But you know who's been disgusting?
Who?
Wyatt Johnston and Logan Stankoven.
This
Short
saying,
King.
Man, like, first of all, shout out Short Kings. But like, this is, look at those guys, where they
Wyatt
were drafted.
Johnston's the second playoff in a row he scored an OT winner.
Yeah, look at where those guys are drafted. We talk about Tampa and how they need to find diamonds in the rough. These are, that is either a very, very late first round pick. Or
it
a,
is. It was 23rd.
Yeah, in a second round pick that you know, is like 5'3" and everyone didn't want to draft. But like, you have to be able to, you take a chance on those guys.
It's Arpon Basu was like, wow, must be nice to have a guy like Wyatt Johnston who you draft like that late and just steps into your lineup immediately. And I was like, correct. But also, Jake Ottinger, Wyatt Johnston, Maverick Bork, Logan Stankoven, Rupe Hintz, Jason Robertson, all drafted 20th or later.
Yeah, and you take
their scouting staff is elite.
You take out Wyatt Johnston,
Thomas Harley too,
and Thomas Harley. But you take out Johnston, Harley, and all of those guys are second round picks. Actually, Harley was a second round pick too. So you take out Johnston, and all of those guys are second round picks or lower.
And Ottinger, Ottinger was
Ottinger was a first. Yeah,
yeah. Ottinger,
so sorry, you take out
so
Ottinger and Johnston.
Haskinen, obviously top three
was
pick.
A top three
That's
pick,
different.
Yeah.
Haskinen, Ottinger, and Johnston. Maverick Bork hasn't played that much, but he was a late first.
Yeah.
But like, basically everyone else.
Everyone else is a second or below.
Yeah.
Like,
and like, I distinctly remember people saying Jason Robertson should have gone higher in his draft year.
Yeah.
And Logan Stankoven, people were
definitely,
like, "Are you
like that?" Is the crazy that was every year? There's a short guy who falls way too far. And it makes everyone look stupid. He is the next DeBrincat.
It's honestly...
Like, DeBrincat, like, that year, we're like, we all know this guy's good. We all know this guy is going to kill it.
And the Leafs got a guy. He didn't
Leafs
fall because
picked,
he was small.
The Leafs picked Korshkov over him, you
but
know?
The Leafs have Matthew Knies in the second round.
Yeah.
No business being in the second round.
Yeah.
No business being in the second round.
Like, it's crazy. And you think... I don't know. I just think, like... First of all, you go back to that 2016 draft. Can you imagine if they pick Austin Matthews in the first round and then Alex DeBrincat in the second? They had the chance to do that, and they didn't. They picked Igor Korshkov.
Never mind that. You could have had Austin Matthews and Sebastian Aho.
Yeah.
That was the Mitch Marner draft. It went Mitch Marner, Travis Dermott. Don't get me wrong, I love Trav.
Yeah, no, but like, who's on a two-way deal right now? It's not Sebastian Aho.
So they had a chance to draft Travis Konecny, and they traded down, got the Travis Dermott pick, and... Even then, Sebastian Aho was taken with the pick right after Trav. Don't get me wrong. I love Trav. I grew up with him. But, like, he will tell you himself.
Yeah.
Sebastian Aho
and,
is better.
And, to be fair, though, there's a lot of now chatter about how, like, the Leafs, they drafted Ian Scott, a different pick. But you right before Jeremy Swayman, however.
That's not fair.
Ian Scott was the CHL goalie of the year.
Yeah.
And had to retire at, I think, 23 because of injuries. He was also very good. Like, you can't. Anyway.
No, he was. Really good.
I saw him on the Marlies too, like where he played very briefly, but he was starting his pro career and he was looking really good and he just kept getting hurt. It's a shame. But who we got? Make your pick.
I'm gonna go Dallas.
Okay. I'm going Vegas. Just A, because I believe in them, but also B, because of to be different than you.
Okay.
And we have one final topic here, Rachel. Todd Reardon got fired by the Pens today.
No, we also have a PWHL report. Yes.
But I'm saying one final topic in our NHL, in our rundown, and then we have the PWHL report. But Todd Reardon got fired. And normally we wouldn't talk about an assistant coach getting fired.
But Jesse Marshall is doing cartwheels right now.
Well, yeah, because Todd Reardon is like their Guy Boucher. He runs their power play and it sucks a lot. And it has continued to suck and nothing has changed. However, Mike Sullivan was reportedly vehemently against anyone on his staff being fired. And then Dubas does it anyway.
Well, this is like, yeah, you should lose your job. Jesse's tweet, though, was 10 out of 10 because he quote tweeted that Mike Sullivan's vehemently against it. And he goes, I'm vehemently against missing the playoffs two years in a row.
Like, yeah, but I guess we're just going to have to deal. Like, yeah, but it's however,
if you have a power play with four Hall of Famers on it.
And it's less
than top 10 in the league. You lose your job.
But it's like 7% for like the first half of the year. Like you got to figure. Yeah.
No, it has to be top 10. Like look at the Oilers power play.
No, I know.
Psycho. It was 50% in the first round. It's insane. Crazy.
And Zach Hyman's not making the Hall of Fame. Like, you know, but no. However,
they have two Hall of Famers on their power play.
Yeah.
Now they might, one of them might end up being one of the greatest players of all time, but I'm right there with you. If you have that much talent on your power play,
you got to figure it
and
out.
And you can't get it going over the course of a season to the point where it costs you a playoff spot, you should lose your job.
But why I bring this up is not to defend Todd Reardon.
Okay.
Or talk about Jesse Marshall's tweets. As much as I love talking about Jesse Marshall's tweets.
We do love Jesse.
It is to talk about that Mike Sullivan is vehemently against it and Kyle Dubas did it anyway. There have been two underwhelming years here. One in Kyle Dubas' first year. There's a lot of pressure on this guy. He's getting paid a lot of money by a very important company to run this team and not screw up the final few years of Sidney Crosby's legacy and career. Do you think Mike Sullivan parts ways here?
Okay, so I have to be very careful. Knowing what I know about FSG,
mm-hmm.
And how they operate, first of all, this is not remotely their priority right now.
Oh, yeah.
Jurgen Klopp has announced he's leaving Liverpool. And
everyone is on suicide watch over there?
Due respect to the Pittsburgh Penguins, not remotely important when you compare them to Liverpool.
Well, yeah, so Jurgen Klopp announced he's leaving Liverpool, so everyone in the FSG office is standing on top of a ledge right now. So they're a little busy. They can't come to the phone.
They're a little busy. But I think, you know what? I think you make a good point in the sense that, like, they handed him FSG. So what I can say, FSG as a group loves Mike Sullivan.
As you should. He's a good coach. He's a fantastic
coach. They love Mike Sullivan. So there's going to be some difficult conversations, let's say, because Kyle Dubas is the president of hockey operations
and the GM.
Right. I think that changes this summer.
Yeah.
But he makes the decisions for the hockey team. And so Mike Sullivan might not like it, but like, let's pretend that somebody's working in a department and their boss doesn't like them. But the person who's like that person's boss really likes them and decides this person deserves a promotion.
Yeah.
If, let's say the person who is, we'll call them the president, decides that person gets a promotion, even though the direct boss doesn't like it, too fucking bad.
Yep.
And the same way is the opposite.
That's
which
how
is,
the corporate structure works, man.
If the president decides I'm firing that person, even though you think they're a great employee and you don't want them to be fired, too bad.
Yeah.
The buck stops at the top. And so Kyle has every right to make that decision in the same way that every other GM and president has the authority to make that decision. And so I think Mike Sullivan is clearly in the wrong here. Like, I get it. He might be close with Todd Reardon
and they probably
have a good relationship.
You've missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. Your power play has been a large, if not the reason why you haven't made the playoffs. Like,
he's got to go.
You have to eventually look at things objectively here.
Right. And so
if we were doing a podcast and I sat down and every time I tried to make a good point, you started dropping slurs into the microphone I wouldn't. And then, you know, our parent company comes and goes, hey, we're going to have to let Rachel go because we can't get your podcast from point A to point B because she keeps dropping slurs over the mic. Like, I wouldn't be like, no, Rachel, like, in all due respect to you.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be like, no, Rachel's my friend. I am not letting her, you know, this is, I would be like, I can see that. Okay
fine, maybe fair enough.
Fine. And it would be the exact same
I'm
way.
I'm disappointed,
the other way.
I understand.
Yeah, exactly. So that, like, there, it's the same thing here, but Mike Sullivan, like, we know in hockey, like, Mike Sullivan would be a very, very sought after coach if he hits the open market.
Yeah, like, there's a few guys obviously on the open market right now. Berube, Evason, Todd McClellan's interviewed.
Yeah, Mike Sullivan would instantly leapfrog all of those guys.
Yeah, and then further to that, heaven forbid he became available, Rod Brind'Amour would be at the very top of everybody's list. And that's an entirely different situation
right
now.
We might be talking about that soon.
Exactly.
Depending on how that goes. But I'm saying, like, any team with a coaching vacancy, like, Ottawa has a new ownership group.
Yep.
I would, like, if I was Michael and Lauer, I would literally, like, get a literal Brinks truck. Like, I would rent one buy one and put sacks of gold coins into it and pull it up to Mike Sullivan, like, drive across the country, over, you know, across the border, go to Mike Sullivan's house, back it up onto his lawn, ruining his lawn, his flowers and all that, to his door, and be like, all these gold coins are yours if you come and coach for us. Like, it, like, that's the theatrics you need to have to get this guy. He's a very good coach. And look,
I also wonder if his message is getting stale in Pittsburgh.
His message might be getting stale, but you know what? For years, I think I wrote a column about this a little while ago, back when I was doing stuff like that. But, like, the Penguins, up until, even, like, in the last 2 years, obviously, but before that, after they won their back-to-back cups, they still were a very good team. They still made, you know, conference finals and second rounds and whatnot. But they were also the most injured team. They were always missing guys. Crosby missed half a year. Malcolm missed half a year.
Letang
had two strokes. Like, you know, like, but there were.
And his dad died.
Exactly. They were always, but, like, even that, like, Brian Rust would miss all this time. Jake Gensel would miss all the time. You know, like, everyone would be hurt and he would somehow. There's a reason why the Mark Donk and Buzz Flibbit meme is legendary, because it's true. He would find a way to insert friggin' Anthony Agostino into the lineup and he would end up scoring a game opening goal that would be the winner. You know?
Secret?
Yeah.
He was this close to being hired by the Canucks when I was there.
Mike Sullivan?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Because his contract was up, and Jim, who'd won the two cups with
him,
and Patrick, who had also won the two cups with
like
him,
that's...
were like, that's going to be our guy.
Over. Yeah.
So had Sullivan, like, had his contract actually, like, run out and they not upped him, he was coming to Vancouver.
What happens if Sullivan goes, screw you guys...
I'm leaving.
And the Canucks lose to the Preds in the first round.
They're not firing Tocchet.
Okay.
Francesco wouldn't let that happen.
Okay.
He's going to win the Jack Adams, so it'd be extremely funny because that would be Andrew Brunette all over again.
It's insanity that they're doing that. Anyway, But
I think there's, like, this is the correct call. Like, Dubas has made the right call.
No, he did, definitely.
100%.
But I'm just wondering, like, we're likely to be in a world where Mike Sullivan's a free agent soon. And I wonder where he goes.
Fire Keefe for him?
I would. Are you kidding? I would put Keefe in a novelty cannon and shoot him across the border. Are you kidding me?
So somebody brought this up. Because Sullivan has term left, there might actually be a way you could orchestrate a trade.
Yeah.
Like a coaching trade.
That'd be great.
It's like Sheldon Keefe and a third round pick or something.
Yeah, tack on
nonsense.
Your 2028 second round pick. Who gives a shit? Like,
I don't even know if you're allowed to do that, but...
Even if
I saw it floated out
there could be a way
like,
to make
I need to figure out if you
they
can
could
do
still
that.
They could figure it out. They could fire Sheldon Keefe, fire Mike Sullivan. They both join and then you trade Nick Abbruzzese for future considerations.
Yeah, you could figure something out.
There you
out.
Go.
I do wonder. I think Sully's going to stay in Pittsburgh. I don't see him resigning.
You're not resigning, but I mean, like, there's...
I don't think FSG allows Dubas to dismiss him. That's what I'm kind of getting at there. I don't see him resigning, and FSG is not going to allow a dismissal. Because they have too much shit going on at Liverpool and the Red Sox, and they're like, this guy is one of the best coaches in the NHL.
However,
you can't fire him.
However...
And that's only, I'm only speaking on what I know about FSG.
Yes, but there are certain situations, like, we all talk about how, you know, guys are under contract, so that means they're not going anywhere. There's term left here. What I think that FSG would want to avoid the most is, and I think the Penguins organization would want to avoid the most, is they go, all right, you're not allowed to fire Mike Sullivan. So they go in, and then Mike Sullivan is pissed and not coaching as well as he can. Kyle Dubas is pissed that his coach is pissed and not coaching as well as he can. So he's not GMing and pohoing as well as he can. And then it's just another wasted year, and they end up having to fire him in December after they start, you know, 7-14-2, and which means that they're chasing the playoffs from behind the eight ball once again. Like, I think there's a situation. I think it's very, as much as I think you're right, obviously you would know better than I do what kind of company FSG is. Like, I can see there being a situation where, like, in a relatively likely situation where they go, like, this could be frayed, or Sullivan goes, like, fire me. I'm not resigning, but fire me. I will make it so you will fire me.
Now that would be different. I think if he asked to be dismissed,
I think he's fucking pissed, and he might be going, like, this is time.
But also, what does that say about Sullivan? You're going to throw a temper tantrum over your assistant coach who wasn't good?
It also depends on, not making the playoffs for two straight years with expectations like that. People lose sight of the plot, and also, like, there are just negative emotions that come up no matter what. Like, if you're in a bad situation, every day sucks, regardless.
We gotta do a Pittsburgh Penguins breakdown.
We
with
do,
Jesse
we
now.
Do.
We gotta bring him back on.
We gotta bring him back on. All right, to end things off, our PWHL report.
Yeah. All right. There's a lot here, and I have it.
So let's run through it.
Committed. So after starting the season in abysmal fashion to the point where we thought they were getting the first overall pick, Toronto has clinched.
They flipped the script.
Yeah, first place in the league. They get to choose their playoff opponent, which I think is super cool.
Yep.
And New York has clinched the ability to draft Sarah Filliere, who, if you don't know who Sarah Filliere is, a really, really good hockey player.
Is she like the Caitlin Clark?
Oh, she was the best player in college this year, by far.
Yeah.
By far.
So we got PWHL Caitlin Clark coming. All right.
She's Canadian. She's already played for Canada at the World Championships, I believe, three times. Mm-hmm. That's how good she is. They took a college kid, and they were like, hey, yo. And she's, like, playing legit minutes. So she's going to play in New York.
So the craziest thing, and I see it in here, too, is that, I knew this. I want to make it clear, but it's crazy to look at it typed out like you did.
Oh.
Is that Natalie Spooner leads the league, ends up with 18 goals. The next closest player
is her teammate.
Has 10. She almost doubled up.
Yeah.
She's fucking unreal.
Yeah. And to be clear, the player we're talking about is Sarah Nurse, and she's also tied with Marie-Philippe Poulin. But that's, we're talking about somebody who has nearly double the goals from another player in the league. Like, Austin Matthews this year had 13 or 14 more goals than Sam Reinhart. Mm-hmm. And we were like, that's a chasm. That's crazy.
Can you imagine?
To have double the goals of your next closest, like, second place is insane. She is, and not to mention, I feel like this part gets lost in all of this. This would be a spectacular accomplishment if it was just a regular situation. She just had a child.
Yeah, insane.
She came back from having a whole ass human.
She came back from pooping a kid out of her body.
And said, I'm going to lead a league in goals. And not just am I going to lead it in goals.
I might lap people.
I'm going to lap people. Yeah. Yeah. She also leads the league in points. Although that's a bit more of a fight. Yeah. It's Poulin, Sarah Nurse, again, who's, by the way, if you don't follow Sarah Nurse on TikTok, she's awesome on TikTok. Alex Carpenter, and surprise, surprise, Marie-Philippe Poulin. So that's super fun. But I'm interested to see who Toronto picks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see the playoffs play out. I'm going to go to a bunch of the games because, like, I'm
interested to see, you know, like, obviously, like, the playoffs and everything, but then I'm interested to see the teams get logos next year and names.
I Yeah, I'm 100%.
That's going to be awesome.
I'm waiting for the merch.
Yeah.
I will be buying a PWHL Toronto jersey.
When it, whatever,
Hundo P.
Whatever they are, like I'm now that I'm now that I make a livable wage, I'm doing that too.
Yeah, you know? Hundo P. I hope that it's some blue purpley situation because purple is my favorite color. But like, I just generally
still be their, it'll be their colors. It'll just be like cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I'm really excited to see kind of what happens, but it's been a banner first year for the PWHL.
It could not have gone better, I think.
Like, outside of not having logos and names, it seriously couldn't have gotten, like any better.
It is.
The games were thoroughly enjoyable.
But they're great experiences to go to. Both you and I have been there. We've seen it. Like, it is. And you know what really impressed me, too, is, like, not impressed me. Like, they have to impress me. But, like, what I meant by, what really sort of stood out to me is, like, you went there from a fan perspective. I went there from a media perspective. And from the media perspective, like, their scrums are fucking huge, man. There are a lot of reporters that cover these games.
Oh, yeah. I went down in the tunnel and I was like, Jesus Christ.
There's a like, lot. There's like, a, you know, like, it's...
This is, like, difficult to navigate right now.
It's not like, you know, after a collegiate game where there's, like, one guy that's just standing there asking
questions.
I've seen
NHL teams with absolutely. Reporters.
Oh, yeah.
Like, far less reporters.
Oh, yeah.
And then Montreal was playing... And every Montreal Canadian who hadn't left town yet went to the game. And Michael Pezzetta, so first of all, Drake Batherson was the other one I wanted to bring up. His sister.
Because his sister plays. Yeah.
He has, from what I can tell, been at almost every single game since the end of the Sens season. Like,
which happened pretty early, so he's been to it quite a bit.
But like, we're talking about an NHL player. The guy could be on vacation. He could be golfing. He could be where. Nope. He is in the stands with his sister supporting PWHL Ottawa. And I think that's fantastic. Then you get to Montreal, who Laura Stacey called it out. And she was like, it is really cool that they not only support us publicly, but like privately, they interact with us and they're there. And then Michael Pezzetta said, like, he didn't realize how tough they were. And I saw a lot of people get on him for that. And I'm like, no, that's a,
that's Michael a good Pezzetta thing.
Is one of the toughest guys in the NHL. That is a compliment. He was talking about how they were scrumming after the whistles, how they're hitting, how the game was back and forth. And he goes, I was on the edge of my seat the whole game. That is a ringing endorsement. And I'm so happy that especially a guy like Pez, who is an enforcer, he is a tough SOB, for him to say like, these girls, they're tough, they're legit, as hell, man.
Yeah,
it's like there's no going against it. And then I think that it almost brought me to tears, even though like I support Toronto, I support the whole league just because I love to see it, but like Toronto's gonna be my team. I think outside of sporting, like my friends who play on other teams, when they played at the Bell Center and they announced, like, Michel Lacroix, who does the Habs PA, he came and did it for PWHL Montreal. He paused before he announced everybody else. He paused before he announced Poulin and allowed the crowd to kind of swell. And he said her number and then paused again. And they went to Poulin's face and she was almost in tears. Because that place was louder than it was for most Montreal Canadiens fans.
And you know what?
Like games this year. It was so loud.
It's because she was finally getting the recognition she deserved.
I don't think it's a hot take to say this. She's the best hockey player in Montreal right now. Like,
not even close.
Okay, I get it. Like, could she play in the NHL? No. But like, league across league, she is the best women's hockey player on the fucking planet. The Montreal Canadiens, with due respect, like, I think they're going to have guys pop next year. They don't have a guy who's in the top 20 NHL players right now. Marie-Philippe Poulin is in the top two, and she's probably not two.
They don't have a guy in the top 50.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, she's the best player in Montreal right now. And it's not to take away from the Habs. It's to say I'm so happy that the people in Montreal aren't just Montreal Canadiens supporters. They're supporting women's hockey as well, and that she's getting the recognition that she deserves because she is an absolute superstar.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's reached the end of the podcast. By the time we record on Monday and you absorb it in your ear holes. We could be living in a different world. So who
knows?
Tomorrow's
going to be interesting.
So tomorrow is going to be quite the day. But until then, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube, on Twitch, on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitter, on any podcatcher under the sun. Write us a review. Give us a little rating. It would be nice. And also donate to Jumpstart, our charity of choice. Jumpstart helps economically disadvantaged kids play team sports, which is a cause that's very near and dear to Rachel and I's hearts. The links and everything will be in the description of the episode. So if you can, I urge you to donate. And until then, we will see you on Monday.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.